Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
Mr. Benroy Turner not able to join us this week, but hopefully he's doing very well. Anyway, it's worth talking about Horizon Forbidden West, because me and you, Mr. JB, have finished the game. All sorts of thoughts. And we were going to wait. We weren't going to do a spoiler discussion on this game because, you know, it's only the first release week. It's only been out for a few days at this point in recording. But at the same time, Elden Ring's on its way here. Elden Ring is storming down the road. So you've got to get things done.
Totally. Like you said, we thought about waiting, and we were like, no, Elden Ring is going to be such a big deal.
It is.
Like, we can't push this. We might never get to do it. So now it's fresh in my brain, Scott Telford, because I finished it literally last night. I got Platinum Trophy last night, and I have lots of thoughts about the story specifically, because we've not, even though we've done, like, essentially two podcasts on Horizon, we've not talked about the story at all.
No.
So this is full spoilers. If you haven't played it yet, or if you just want to know what's going on, yeah, this is full spoilers.
Yes, full Megalovania-sized spoilers. Absolutely everything will be covered, because it's weird, right? My overall thoughts are that this game is very thin on the ground. If you talk about narrative beats, if you literally laid out on paper what happens beat to beat to beat, it's very little there. And I was quite disappointed by it. It's the reason that I gave it 4 stars, alongside the fact that I think it is just more of the same overall.
Yeah.
Separate discussion, potentially. But on the story front, because Zero Dawn was so strong, I said this on Monday's podcast when we were doing the wind-up stuff, I thought that they had such a great mystery embedded in Horizon, like about, you know, what happened in the old world, how much does that stuff affect the present day, how do we get here, the robot dinosaurs, all the AIs, everything else. And then obviously they answered all those questions at the end of Zero Dawn. The only thing that was left was, where did that far-off signal come from that activated the Hades AI and set all the terraforming stuff off in the first game? And so that was all they had to run with in this. But in Forbidden West, they just kind of go, well, we'll just have you do it all over again. The world needs saving. And at no point did it feel like it justified itself narratively. But I don't know if you agree with that.
I know what you mean. Before I jump into it properly, I just kind of want to sum up in case anyone hasn't listened to the previous podcast and are just jumping into this. I really like it. I think I'm similar to you. I think it's a really solid 4-star.
I still give it 4-star.
Yeah, almost breaks into 4.5. I think it's incredibly recommendable. I think you definitely, if you love, you know, this type of game, if you love, you know, PlayStation's exclusives, you should definitely give it a try for yourself. But I am far more critical when it comes to the writing and when it comes to the story. And it's interesting what you said there. You know, obviously there was a tease at the end of Zero Dawn of how they could continue it. But I think it's very telling that with Silence's character in particular, like, they almost don't know what to do with him in this game. He's
such a waste of Lance Reddick.
Totally. Yeah. He's like featured heavily in the first, you know, couple of hours of the game, but then quite literally disappears from the plot. And the way that they wrap up his story, it's quite satisfying, but he's almost written out, and he comes in at the end in such a strange way that it makes me wonder if they kind of took the cliffhanger of Zero Dawn and then realized maybe we wrote ourselves into a corner with that. Maybe we should do something different.
It's really weird, because the overall crux of Forbidden West is that the likes of Tilda, like, basically the idea is that you could find random documents in Zero Dawn that told you about a ship called the Odyssey that left, you know, on some sort of voyage to survive the apocalypse 1,000 years ago or whatever. And that was kind of it. It was just this thing that was talked about in amongst the fandom as, you know, I wonder what, like, it feels like they would do more with that. That is exactly what they've done. And that doesn't involve Silence at all, really. But the crux of Forbidden West is that all of these aliens who are actually people, who are the people from the Odyssey that left 1,000 years ago, they found out the key to not aging. For me, they barely go into that. You just have to accept it. Yeah. And you just have to accept that they've been the same group of people for 1,000 years and that they built a society, they got sick of it, human, you know, different human ways of being happened and everything went sideways. And then you later find out that it was because of this AI consciousness thing that they developed called Nemesis, which is an amalgamation of all their various, you know, human wills combined, all their prejudices, all their anger, everything, and that thing corrupted and destroyed the planet, and that's what they're fleeing from.
Yes.
And they sent the signal in Zero Dawn's timeline, they sent the signal to activate Hades because they want to stop off on Earth and attempt to terraform it, but you later find out that they're only just stopping by to go somewhere else, which threw me off.
So, I guess, to explain to anyone who may need a quick clarifier of what happened at the end of this game, the big twist, like you said, is that the Far Zenith people, you know, accidentally created this thing called the Nemesis, which, like you said, you know, it's an amalgamation of their digital consciousness, and that digital consciousness is pissed off and essentially wants to eradicate the
because it's called Nemesis, isn't it?
Probably, yeah.
Just trying to get by.
Like, if you call your, like, big machine something as evil as Nemesis, what do you expect? Like, you're asking for trouble.
It's happened
calling
before.
Calling it the Nemesis system.
Like, Umbrella got there.
I know, but at least they wanted him to be evil. They knew what they were getting, naming him that.
True.
But yeah, they've made this big thing. It's coming now after the Far Zenith people who had to flee their own country, planet, and have come to Earth, like you said, is a stopgap. But, like, that, to me, robs the game of, like, an actual villain.
Yep.
Because you don't have Silence as a real villain. Because, spoilers, why am I saying that? But eventually it's revealed that he's actually, you know, going to help Aloy, and eventually he
joins
the team.
Which I do love that scene.
Me too.
Yeah.
But he joins the team at the end. Then you have the Far Zenith people who are absent for a lot of the game. Mm. And, like you said, are kind of one-dimensional in a lot of ways because they only get a few scenes
and they're just
murderous.
Yeah.
But then at the end, they try to play the card of they're not just murderous, they're just fleeing and they're using this as a stopgap.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have the Nemesis because that's introduced in literally the last scene.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I felt like I was lacking something to focus my attention on. Like, mm-hmm. there was no core villain, interesting villain that brought the whole thing together. And that was a major disappointment for me.
Well, because, I mean, ultimately, in that regard, they don't do anything with the villain that is supposedly set up, which is the Blight. Like, that's what it was in all the trailers.
Yeah.
Was the idea that everything that you did in the first game, all the different ways that you futzed around with the AIs and you tried to save the world and whatever, that something had gone wrong with that and the process wasn't able to kick in properly and the world itself wasn't able to rebuild, which is why this thing called the Blight now exists. Now, there's only 6 months in between Zero Dawn and Forbidden West, but it's enough for this Blight stuff to kick in. And so that's what your main drive is. Go save the world, which is the most nebulous thing you can do in a video game. And that didn't do anything for me.
No.
And plus, I don't think they do enough with the state of the world, or they don't restrict parts of the environment because of the Blight. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't feel like it does.
I fully agree with that. If there's one major missed opportunity for me in the world design and even the gameplay, it is not utilizing what the Blight is doing and how the world is, you know, on the verge of collapse, on the verge of an apocalypse. You know, you hear a lot of people talking about storms, but you only ever see the aftermath of them. You're never like caught in something that is changing the landscape. And when, you know, you move further west into Tanakh territory at one point, and you kind of see, at least what I did when I entered there, like a storm was kind of circling in the sky and things got all red and stuff, and I was like, this is awesome, they're going to do something with this, I'm going to go further into this territory, and the further west I'm going to get, the more, you know, destroyed and apocalyptic things we're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily the case. A lot of that stuff kind of happens off screen, or you kind of stumble across small missions of someone wanting to, you know, unpollute their rivers from being poisoned and what have you. But yeah, for me, it's such a cool concept, and they just didn't do enough with it tangibly.
I don't think they do enough with anything. Like, I think it's so weird. Every time I've talked about this game, I've verbally only been negative on it, even though there are obvious massive positives to it. The most standout one being the graphics.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to do a spoiler cast on it, then I think that's more narrative stuff and story-based stuff, which is where it absolutely drops the ball. For me, it's the weakest part of the whole game. And so, like, you know, you have stuff like all these potential threads that I would say Zero Dawn has a lot of narrative weight to it, like whether it's on the individual level, the micro level of Aloy, or the macro level of the state of the world, the AIs, the mystery of it, and figuring out all those different things. And they're all fundamentally connected. Like, I love that connection of Aloy finding out who she is, all the stuff with Elizabeth Sobeck, which fundamentally ties into the state of the world as you literally explore it as a player and as Aloy, leaving the Nora tribe and figuring out all that stuff, and how the rules of something like the Nora came to be. It's so much tighter. And I said this in the other podcast and stuff, but it's like, it needs to then justify this wider lore. And so they blow everything out. And it's almost like they then can't have Silence as the main villain. You know, he can't be the Robotnik to the Sonic, because then Lance Reddick's not going to be available in all this wider media they're going to be doing, potentially.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like, well, we need to like have this wider world that you can then plug little stories in going forward. So we have a 6-month gap, and then we have all these things where Silence removes himself from everything, comes back later, and frees everything up to just plug little stories in for whatever going forward. But that is to say that it can, contrasting like how tight Zero Dawn felt as a narrative and as story beats, there's just nothing here. Like at the very beginning, it's again, I said that on Monday's podcast, that, you know, Aloy finds out that she's a false messiah, that nothing that she did in the at the end of Zero Dawn actually meant anything, but she's still called the savior. They don't do anything with that. Like, it's not like she has a moment of reckoning or anything. It's not like they have a conversation that's similar to the anointed scene from the first game. And then you've just got all the stuff with the Far Zenith people, who when you fight them, it's horrible. Like, like the first boss fight against one of the Far Zenith aliens / superhero, you never find out how they can fly. They can just fly because they're very much like the villains from Superman 2. Like, they're just, you know, they're just a set of flying evil Kryptonians, and it's just like, okay, that's what we're doing. We're doing that trope, and they're all disconnected, and they talk like Superman villains. Like, they're like a bunch of Zods coming after you. Like, it's really lame.
It's, I mean, for me, I like the idea of the Far Zenith like population, and I like their design. You know, yes,
oh, really?
It's not explained, but I thought like the suits look sick. I like the way like the flying is animated. I thought it at least looked cool. I liked that they were powerful, but yeah, they do miss a trick with them, because Aloy and her team are essentially the only people who know that they exist. Like, none of the tribes interact with them. None of the tribes really know about this conflict going on. And I thought that was a missed opportunity, because, like you said, Aloy is held up as this, you know, messiah figure, you know, which she definitely rallies against. And I thought it would have been fascinating to have this population literally descend from the stars, and we know they're human. Aloy knows that they're human. You know,
and have everybody react to that. Yeah.
And have everyone react to that. Have these, you know, cultures and these tribes, you know, who view these people as gods, and see how that changes them. See how that complicates Aloy trying to win over these people who no longer view her as the messiah, because they have seen what they think of as literal gods. Like, but the fact that they're separated literally on their own island, and they don't have that interaction with the plot, to me is just like, there's so much you could have done with them.
Yeah, that island, how did no one see that? It's literally from the beach, you can see that. It's this massive future. It looks like it literally came from the F5000 or whatever. Yeah. And it's just sitting there, and no one talks about it. And when I got there, because the whole time when you start realizing that that's going to be the end game, you have to go to this island, take out their base of operations, get the character of Beta back, and whatever. And I was like, oh, we're gonna go there. We're going to fly over the sea. I'm going to use a Stormwing, whatever it is, Stormbird, whatever it's called. I'm going to go there. No, you just stand on the water, and it's like, well, it's there.
Yeah.
Like, just how did no one? That was such a weird beat. Like, there's a lot of weird beats in this.
There are. I mean, I'm definitely not one who, you know, cries plot hole or gets like really, really annoyed at sort of inconsistencies or things that aren't explained. And when it comes to the Far Zenith population, like I said, you know, the fact that they can fly, their powers and stuff, I don't need that explained, because that is cool. The one thing that did stick out though is that they make a big deal of them being invincible. They have this shield that you can't penetrate, and part of the reason why Aloy can't fight them is because she literally can't fight them.
Like,
they are invulnerable. And then finally, to have this finale, they need to be vulnerable. But the way that they solve that is Silence off screen has a machine that he just fixes it. He just has this thing. They don't tell you what it is, why it's important, how he managed to solve this, and he throws it out and the shields come down. And it's stuff like that where a lot of it felt like this Deus Ex Machina that was coming in because they had to wrap it up. And it's like, that's interesting, the fact that they have this infinite power over our heroes. I want to know how they can overcome that. And the answer here is this bloke was off screen, and he was figuring it out, don't worry. And that to me is like, Another thing where it's not horrible, but it's certainly wasted.
It's like script convenience.
Yeah.
The thing is, I potentially love when you first find out that Silence has found their weakness. I love that because they're so intimidating and terrifying, and they're so over the top powerful, and they literally feel like Superman villains. They feel like J.K. Simmons' character in Invincible. They're just sort of, you know, they're descending down on you. They're going to mash you into a fine paste. You need to dodge everything, get out of the way, and find a way out of there, which is what the first boss battle is, even though it's literally the worst boss battle possibly in gaming history. That thing is terrible. Terrible.
I wouldn't go that far, but it's bad.
I would. Oh my god! I it'll be in a list at some point in the future. But that's the whole thing. The way this lore is built is on specifics and like literal specifics. Like it's like this. Like in Zero Dawn, it's like these are the cauldrons. These make the AI. These are the different places that the machines were built. These are the specific functions that the different creatures have. These are the AIs that govern different parts of the environment itself. They thought of everything. It's the way the Mass Effect. You can get lost in the Codex. Like in Horizon, you can get lost in that lore. It's all calibrated very, very tightly. And neatly and satisfyingly. And in Forbidden West, they kind of go, well, we're going to have a race of people that survived 1,000 years and they're going to fly. We're not going to explain how that's going to happen. And they're going to do all these different powers, all these beam weapons. And there's one bit where Tilda just does like a flash point thing.
Yeah.
And then transports you and people out of a scene. What is that? Like,
it's a good point. I didn't think about it at the moment.
Things like that are like, well, like the writer needed the person to get out the room. So whatever. But it flies in the face of how tight Zero Dawn is. And I think that they can't have it both ways. You either build your lore on specifics, Mass Effect style, and I'm going to ask questions like, how did this happen? And they vaguely try and go, well, they had someone on the ship that it, when given over enough time, figured out how to live forever.
Yeah.
And like, it's, you kind of do it, but then you also can't then do the Silence thing where you have to just go with it. And so I like the potential of Silence being the guy that figured out how to take them down because it suits his character that he's on top of everything. He's like an evil Batman. I was like, that's cool. But when Aloy gets on board, you kind of need something to satisfy. I don't mind him in this exact instance. I don't mind Silence being the keeper of that secret, but overall it needs to feel like you've thought it out and they really haven't.
That's it. For me, like the one differentiator I would have liked, I don't mind Silence being the one who's been off coming up with it.
It's kind of what makes him the special villain.
Totally. Yeah. But I would have liked to have had a hand in its creation. I would have liked if we teamed up and he was like, look, I know how to beat it. I'm going to need your help to get this part. I go to this place and we can find out something more. Go to one of the cauldrons or something to get a piece of tech. Like that would have just added that extra element of making me feel involved in the story, making Aloy feel more involved in the victory. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's still Silence's idea. It's still his, you know, theory that came up with it or whatever. But you feel satisfied as a player because you're contributing to that battle in that way. You know, you're contributing to the downfall, and it's not just some guy who's come off screen and handed you the victory.
Because that's another thing as well, is like at the end of, the beginning of this game, you knew that, well, the end of Zero Dawn, the beginning of this game, you know that Silence has Hades. Yeah. And so they hang so much on him. He broke open Hades and found everything out. And it's just, they have to use that as a retroactive plot device to be like, this is how he's able to keep up with what Aloy finds out. Though Silence didn't interact with the Far Zenith people, but he talked to Hades. Hades knew somehow that how to take down, you know, this thing that was 1,000 years on a different planet. And Hades was the one who knew how to take that stuff down. Like, yeah.
Which I actually didn't mind that stuff. That's right. When I was still on board with the story, because I thought following Silence that early on, and especially finding Hades that early on, I thought was a really cool twist that I didn't expect. I thought Hades, I'd be following, you know, the entire game or whatever. So to have that confrontation with that AI and to get some information in that cool visual kind of space where he's just like this red blob, kind of like
I was so back and forward on that stuff.
Really? Yeah. See, I like that stuff. But I didn't mind that so much because later on, it's revealed that, you know, the Nemesis sent the signal to Hades to activate him in the first game. And for me, I was kind of like, well, yeah, he would know that stuff then. It would know that stuff because you've literally been beamed, essentially, the consciousness of the Far Zeniths.
Yeah.
So it kind of, for me, that made more sense. And that was when I was more on board with it, because I was like, where are they going to go with this? And then they kind of didn't go many places with it, but I was excited.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's a middle third of this that I've said in the review, I said in the podcast and stuff. It's the middle third that I absolutely loved. And it's like, it's when you get the base together, you've got Catalo, you've got, I think she's called Alva and Val, and everyone's back at the base. And it feels like this Mass Effect Horizon hybrid.
Yeah.
And the combat is coming into its own and you're finding a different play style. That was when it was the strongest to me.
This comes back to my theory.
Slam that water bottle, Josh Brown.
Boom! This game should have just been an RPG because the main story in this game, to me, works like a Bethesda RPG story in that it's quite thin and it's quite interesting, but it's not necessarily the best part of the experience. At least it wasn't for me. You know, no. For me, I loved the writing and the side quests and the characters on the side quests much more than what I got in the main quest. So it kind of makes
Give
me think
me political
like,
mining disputes, mate. I've got, I'm exactly. there for them all day long.
So it just makes me think like if you're already, like it's already an RPG. It's already an RPG. Just go that extra step. Give us that extra element of choice and customization. And I think the main plot would have worked a bit more if you had choices. And weirdly, it does throw you one or two choices. Well, one choice in particular with Regala's fate. I mean, I don't know if anything changed with this because I chose to kill her.
Did you? I chose to keep her alive.
Did she stay alive then?
Yes. Well, okay. No. So she helps you with the storming of the last place. And then she takes on about five or six of the whatever those fancy other robots are called.
Yeah, okay.
A few of them bear down on her and she says, like, this is the death that I've always wanted. And she goes out swinging.
I suspected when I chose to kill her, because Catalo is the one who actually does it, if you do it. Like, he spears her, and he feels very
satisfied.
Can't believe
you killed Regala.
Wow, in the moment. It was my girlfriend's fault. She was like, kill her. I just kill her. And I was like,
She was cool.
I know, I was like, she was cool, but I was just like, no. So I killed her. He killed her. And then, yeah, I was kind of thinking, like, I wonder if I said no and spared her. Mm. He would have done that anyway.
No.
But you've obviously said no, but she still dies. So that's interesting that it's still an illusion of choice in a way.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's one of the only choices in the game that has any real cutscene carryover. Like, I mean, because then she's at the base. You have everybody saying, can we trust her? I don't know if she should be coming here. Everyone's freaking out that Regala is around. But I love that dynamic. Like, that's one of the things that I love the most about it, especially because of the likes of Catalo and everything, like trying to realize that they can be allies.
Well, you know, I kind of want your opinion on this because while the story, the main story of Gaia and the Farzinus and Nemesis and stuff, to me was somewhat disappointing. Again, I go back to the RPG thing of the stuff that you do along the way, especially with the Tanakh, especially with Regala, to me that's far better executed and far more satisfying to the point where I almost wish that they are doing... At the end of this game, they are introducing another world-ending plot. To me, I almost wish that this game was smaller scale and it was you chasing Silence, getting into the Tanakh trouble, and then at the end you realize the world-ending plot. Because I want to know your opinion on this, but when I got to the Nemesis thing, I was just kind of like... I was a bit exhausted because I'm just thinking, we've just solved one world-ending calamity to go into another one, and I know that's kind of the point at the end. Everyone's feeling like despair, and they have to band together and stuff, but I was just like... It's on a scale that is just repeating itself.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of beats in this that repeat the same stuff from the first one, like even down to the scene that we'll talk about the Ted Farrow stuff, but even the scene in this where you go to Ted Farrow's tomb is very like in Zero Dawn when you go into the tomb in the mountain and you find out the truth in there, and it's almost shot the same way, like of her coming back out the widely lit room and everything. That stuff feels quite similar. Another thing as well is, you know, that whole idea of the world-ending calamity stuff. For me, it lines up with that one of my favorite things about the first Horizon, which was that conversation on, you know, if you were a new civilization, you could access all of old-school, original humanity's experiences, memories, lessons learned, and everything. Would you leave the plans for a nuclear bomb and assume that they would learn to not use them, or have you just given them nuclear bombs? Like, have you just provided the means to create the next nuclear bomb? That was the most fascinating question in Zero Dawn. I loved it. I didn't like how in Forbidden West they doubled down on saying that what Farrow did was the absolute worst thing in the world. I wasn't necessarily picking a judgment either way. Okay. I love that they kind of leave it on. I know he's the villain, but they do leave it up there a little bit to be like, oh, that's an interesting ponderance, let's say. And so their version of this is the Nemesis stuff, which is the thing where, like I said, it's like this weird AI consciousness made up of all of our hatred. It's literally the internet, basically. It's like a better version. It's like if the internet came to life, would it kill everybody? And I like that as a talking point. Like, all the data we're putting into this algorithm as a collective, if that thing ever gained sentience, would it realize that humans are the worst thing in the world, and would it try and take everybody out?
Yeah.
That's a brilliant talking point or a brilliant concept. And that's assumedly what they'll explore in Horizon 3. But that was this game's version, almost in the same part of the story of the thing that's in Zero Dawn. And I like that as a talking point. I like that that's the thing that destroyed the Far Zenith planet, and that's why they're coming here. But like you said, it's a world-ending thing. Wait till the next time we'll do this stuff. And so it's little glimmers of what I think is Horizon. It's what makes Horizon identifiable. And I don't like that Forbidden West made it more in light. The fact that we're even remotely talking about it as an Ubisoft adjacent open world game, the fact that that stuff is out there at all, like there's a few different pieces starting to do the rounds, that it's, you know, the last of an outdated model of open world games, is a big shame, because there's a lot of stuff they could have pulled from. And one of the only criticisms, or biggest criticisms, of Zero Dawn was that they played stuff very safe. Like, you know, the vision modes from Hitman, you've got, like, the combat model is very Tomb Raider. Like, all these things had been done. And I just think it's a bit of a shame that even in that regard, like, they have this potential to be better, to be higher, to be more memorable, and they don't really take it.
That's it. I mean, I would agree. You know, there are so many threads in here that I find really interesting. There's a lot of...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Stuff that I think is genuinely well executed, but there's so much of it, and I just think it gets lost under a lack of kind of focus and a lack of clarity. And that's, to me...
Focus, eh? Focus?
You got loads of those now. Hey? Just hand those boys
what
out.
What was that? She's like, oh, I found this thing that literally propelled me, like, as Aloy, in front of the rest of the world. I found a cache, and there's, like, 8 of them now.
You know what? I didn't mind it, because I like the idea of your team, like, getting up to speed.
Same.
And stuff. I think it justified it.
But they don't do anything with it.
Which is, like, the tagline of this whole game, isn't it?
If you became like this little miniature version of almost the Avengers, which is what the kind of the card they're playing towards the end, that your team's going in, but you were going up against some elite Regala Tanakh, but you were outthinking something because you had the battle plan, like the Matrix style, you'd learned this stuff before, that would have been a cool payoff.
It would have been,
but
they also give some of the enemies, the Sons of the Prometheus, they're called in the Rebel camps, like they're supposed to have focuses as well, but it doesn't really change how you attack them. Like, they get to override machines, they get some scanning technology that, you know, pings you and doesn't let you use your focus and stuff, but it's a bit of a shame. Going back to what you said there about like the kind of Avengers thing and building the team, like I liked a lot of the individual characters, but this links to me with Aloy's lack of arc in this game. At the beginning, they very clearly and absolutely hammer it home that they are building up a theme of her having to learn to work with people. You know, she constantly is going off on her own. She constantly like leaves Vaal back at the camp so she can go on her own to do these missions. She says it's too dangerous. And it hits you over the head with the fact that, you know, people are constantly saying, Aloy, you can't do this on your own. Like, it's way too big. And for me, I didn't really like that as a narrative thing. But
no.
I liked even less that they dropped it. And like, they don't actually develop that after the opening hours. Like, you do get your team together, but there's not a moment where, you know, Aloy's, you know, going out on her own, her solo mentality, her lone wolf mentality becomes like an issue when she kind of learns to overcome it. And I guess in a way they probably didn't want to repeat the end of Zero Dawn where you do, you know, collect everyone, you know, you win them all over, they come to your aid in the battle and stuff. But to me, it just felt like this kind of false character arc that's abandoned, and I was like, what happened there? Because that's fascinating, because it's not something that I'm kind of like grasping at. Like, I'm sure you agree, they hit you over the head with,
you know,
so
what's really
many
funny
saying that
I didn't notice that stuff.
Interesting.
At all.
I feel terrible now.
No, no, not at all. When the first person who brought it up was Ash. When you and her were messaging each other about, like, as the audience won't know, when we're playing through Horizon, we're messaging each other because Ash was going through it for PlayStation Access, and we were going back and forth on our different thoughts and stuff. And she said that about, like, oh, they really hit you over the head with this whole Aloy can't be alone thing.
Yeah.
But for me, I didn't like Val. I thought he was annoying. I just thought he was this little yes man, and I was just like, leave, dude. Like, that's the thing. I'll protect him at all costs. He just annoyed me. I was like, leave me alone. Like, I've got this. In the words, that phrase that I hate in every single phrase, I've got this. Like, that's everywhere. My general thoughts were, I'm Aloy. I have this so much. Like, let me crack on. I don't want to be babysitting you. I don't want him. So I actually wanted her to be left alone as soon as possible. And so when every time she was saying, look, I'm going to go and do this thing. I can't take you with me because you're too slow and you're not as advanced as me and everything else. I was going, yeah, great. Because that's what I want from her. I wanted to be the strongest, most independent woman possible. But I said this in the other podcast, or maybe I said this to you in between recordings. I don't like that they hang some of her strength on Rost, which comes later on. Because I'm investing in Aloy as this, like, totemic force of, you know, like, she's so powerful. I want that as this, for her.
That's...
You know, and these other things take away from that.
Totally. That's a big thing we should pick apart. So, to kind of repeat what happens, you know, at one point in the game, obviously, you encounter Beta, who is another clone of Elizabeth Sobeck. However, Beta has been imprisoned by the Fire Zeniths for a long, long time. She's, you know, mentally damaged and scarred from the kind of torture that she's been put through. And when you talk to her, Aloy is actually annoyed because... In her eyes, Beta isn't living up to what Elizabeth Sobeck should be. She's not as strong as she thinks she should be. And you get to this moment where they have this heart-to-heart, and Beta kind of says that, you know, like, why are we different? We're literally perfect genetic clones. Like, what's different between you and me? And then, like, Aloy says, she kind of points to Rost. You know,
she sort of
lands,
she's like, well, I guess it's Rost.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, well...
She gets Rost up, and she's like, look, like, we're the same clones, but it's not just about your genes, it's not just about your genetics, it's about your environment.
Nature,
it's about,
nature.
Like, yeah, the people who mentored you, and Rost was someone who helped teach her stuff. And to me, I totally get your criticism of that, but to me, one of the big things in this game was me struggling to figure out why Aloy in particular was special, because so much lip service is paid to Elizabeth Sobeck being this, you know, genius, great.
She's like a god
person.
In this.
Yeah, she's literally like a god, like she deified. Mm-hmm. And to me, I was kind of like, well, that's cool, but it sucks for me that if only Aloy's strengths come from her genetics and her focus, I'm like, that. I need more than that. I hate the chosen one narrative in any story. You know, I hate it when someone is destined to be great. Mm-hmm. So I did like that they complicated with that by saying, like, look, you know, it's not just about how you were born, who your parents were, who you were cloned from. It's the people around you. I thought that was a neat... character building moment, but at the same time, what you're about to say now, I also totally think is valid.
Well, that was her whole thing in Zero Dawn. Like, I am not your anointed. Like, I carve my own path through this thing. And it's not that Rost shouldn't play any part in that. It was just the way that scene was handled. Like I said, it's almost like she stumbled onto him when trying to find a reason in the moment of Beta saying, well, how are you so different to me? As opposed to knowing that inside and out. Like, it was just a weird beat in the way that stuff came together. We should touch on the Ted Farrow stuff, which is, for me, the biggest missed opportunity in the game, because they do a whole sequence where you're descending down into... You find out that the CEO, the guy from the original game who caused the entire world to forget its knowledge and everything else, and humanity to restart, that you find where he was at the end of time, at the end of the world kind of thing, 1,000 years ago, as it all went sideways. And you go down, you descend, and it's amidst this whole conversation on elongating life, and elongating, the Far Zenith people have obviously mastered it, but it's all these different, you find all these, like, recordings, all these different text logs of Pharaoh living with two other people. I think one of them had been killed. And it was this whole thing where it's like, what lengths will he go to actually cling on to life, even though he chose to delete everything else? And what will his life be if he uses all these insane experimental drugs to stay alive? And you get to the point where you go to a set of blast doors that you open, and he's still, quote-unquote, alive behind them. But the way the camera is set is that you're looking through the blast doors, and he's to the side. So a character walks in. I think the camera just stays static.
Yeah.
Like, a person walks in, turns to the side. This person has also built an entire religion around the idea of Ted Farrow. So them seeing seeing them is a huge deal. You don't see them. The person comes back out the blast door, camera hasn't changed, and says, burn him, burn it. It's not good. Which I like as a comment on if you were like face-to-face with God, like Blade Runner style, would you actually gouge the eyes out because it's the worst thing ever? I don't know. But they dance right around that and don't give you the payoff.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, you're going to have to show me him because we've just spent like all this time. Like, and if you're going to contrast it to how far Zenith got it right, I need to see how you got it so wrong. I just couldn't believe they didn't do that.
I agree. I think it's one of the biggest missed opportunities in the game. And
I'm running, Josh Brown.
No, man. I mean, look, I'm a huge horror fan, right? when it comes to horror, I'm always of the opinion of, you know, tease it more than show it. You know, Jaws is great because you barely see the shark.
Yes.
You let your imagination run wild. Here, I didn't think they teased it anywhere enough for me to be imagining what horror was behind that door. It didn't work on that psychological level, and especially because, you know, you've been waiting to see, like, what Ted Farrow has become, what these mutations are.
And can he talk? Does he have thoughts? He's been there for 1,000 years.
Yeah, not to see that, and to just have him burn to death off screen, for me, this game, its game's writing, this game's story has an issue with tell, don't show.
Yeah.
Like, it loves sitting you down and explaining to you what's going on. But like with the, you know, cataclysmic storms or whatever, you know, the end of the world, the blight stuff, it very much tells you about it rather than opting to visually show it.
You don't feel it in the gameplay.
So you don't feel it, yes.
Yeah. Like, it's not like at the beginning you're really struggling to get by. Like, maybe if you didn't play Zero Dawn, you might die to some of the machines. But I barely died in this game. Like, it was, I mean, I die a lot in games. Like, at least as I'm finding playing Sifu.
It's funny you should say that. Not to make this, you know, more about the combat stuff, but I actually found, I think I told you in the first podcast we did, but I found it like way harder than Zero
Dawn.
Really?
I've seen people say that, but I
went,
for me.
Like the night I went back to Zero Dawn, I was playing that on hard and absolutely trouncing everyone. Mm. And then I started this one on hard thinking it was going to be the same thing. And I just got like wrecked over and over again. I had to knock it down.
Okay. I mean, for my thing, it was the only thing that I really, really don't like in the combat space is that you get asked to scan stuff all the time. Especially when you're up against bosses. That final Tilda fight is nigh on broken. Because it's just, she just charges you over and over again. Sometimes she'll stop. But like Aloy's like, I should scan that for weaknesses. And I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to, Aloy. But like, I can't, she's in my face all the time. I can't get any of the scans off, mate.
I was so astonishingly overpowered during that scene.
You just one shot her.
That I was just hitting her with acid rounds to the point where it was just almost comical.
Because I was playing it for review. So like, I got to that final fight with like minimal upgrades.
Right.
And I didn't have that much ammo left either. So it was just like a few bits of ammo, put some traps down. When you fight that giant creature in the last cauldron, the big spine, whatever it's called,
spine sliver or something.
That thing, I was completely out of ammo. I had one blast trap left, and that was what killed it.
Wow.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have. I don't know how I would have got through it. But it was just, we're fighting Tilda at the very end. That was one of those things where it was. That's my problem with the combat is that that combat breaks if anything gets in your face.
Because
the time doesn't slow when you scan, which is just. I wish it just slowed down like when you have the weapon wheel open. I wish you had time to scan. But that was what also made me think it was easy. Like every other encounter other than the final one, because it's just scan, that thing's detachable, that thing's a chain reaction, that thing's going to tear off. Okay, tag all them, right, aim for the purple bits, done.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, but I would also say that's very satisfying. It's very satisfying
to do. It's not that it's not like satisfying in the moment, but that was just what I did for everything, and that was how I got through every single fight.
I don't know how much time we have left, but...
Non-Josh Brown.
I want to ask you one thing. Yes. Listen, we're actually recording this over five. We can go on it's fine. I want to ask you about Tilda. You mentioned Tilda there is a boss fight, but what did you think of her as a character and the twist that she was actually essentially not the main villain, but she wasn't working with you or keeping you informed in the way that you initially think?
Well, that's the thing. The thing that I love the most about Horizon is that idea of either a super advanced society or some future society looking back on what we have now. I like anything in any narrative, any piece of art that lets me reappreciate or reconsider what we have now. So I like the fact that even though she went and lived 1,000 years on a different planet, she was still finding infinite beauty in pieces of art that have existed in human history and out in the last sort of couple of 100 years. And I love that she'd made that little gallery that you could wander around. I did all the button prompts for that. I love that they recreated the pieces of art and paintings and everything. And I thought that scene when you sit down with her and have the really elegant tea party thing with her was really well done. But things like that, they're jarring because I'm like, how did no one find this? Like, how did no one see this? And I'm like, I couldn't get a handle on her powers in that scene because like she's just done that flashbang thing against the other guys who are all ostensibly super heroic Kryptonians anyway. And then she flash stuns them. She flies you out. And then she, does she magic up a table in a different room? She says she's been living there for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm like, time frame wise, were you not with the people? Like, why are you separate? I just, that stuff threw me off a bit. And I like her voice delivery. She's Carrie Ann Moss, I think.
Yeah.
And I thought she was like solid enough. I never fully trusted her. And I thought that right. the way that they tried to do kind of like the standard, you know, super rich person has incredibly deluxe place that the character wanders into. We've seen that trope a million times. So I don't know, it kind of worked and it kind of didn't.
To go back to your point about it being kind of like, you know, strange that she had this kind of like situation. For me, you know, it might not be a great reason, but they did kind of like touch upon that. I think she says like it was built to withstand anything. That's why it's one of the few buildings kind of still there. So the kind of idea I got was that it was just sort of untouched while she came back to Earth. And
a wider shell, sure. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of like, you've got like really pristine teapots and stuff like that. I'm like, did you bring them from the ship that you came? Like,
right, okay.
I'm on that level with this because like I said, they consider everything elsewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask those questions. Like, if you have a pristine, like, forks and knives and a tea set and some fresh fruit, how have you got that? Did you magic it up? Like, I don't know.
Well, questions I did not ask. But I like that someone is asking them. When it comes to her character in particular, though, I thought she was one of the highlights of the story. Like you said, I think, you know, she's performed really well. I'm pretty sure it is Carrie Ann Moss. You know, yeah. I think the voice acting is really good. You know, it's warm, but also you have this kind of, like, level of mystique and, you know, cold elegance to it. Warring with each other.
Her talking to Silence. That's my favorite exchange in the game.
I thought, you know, that scene where you do sit down with her and she kind of like explains everything was like really fascinating, really well shot. I do think it kind of stumbles because if you notice, if you do every dialogue thing, like she's always standing up. Like the whoever like directed that scene clearly knew that having an extended conversation between two people at a table was going to get boring. So every time you ask her a question, she stands up and she looks around and she sits back down and then you ask her something else.
She's got to do something.
Up. Very minor nitpick.
I love that you
really
noticed
important.
That and not the about, like, why are we even here? Like, just
it's classic. It's the things we notice. That, to me, though, isn't really important. But I did think that her character was one of the best anchors in that kind of like final act. I genuinely didn't see her kind of like heel turn coming, but I thought that it was believable in a way that the other Farzinas were just kind of like comic book evil characters. You know, you get that excellent moment, in my opinion, where she explains her relationship with Elizabeth Sobeck and how they kind of like used to run into each other in meetings and stuff. They eventually became lovers. Eventually, Elizabeth kind of moved on. Mm. One of her biggest regrets was leaving Earth without getting Liz along, and this is kind of her second chance.
Yeah, I didn't buy that she would still care after 1,000 years.
Really?
1,000 years.
Oh, mate, you're not romantic enough, that's why.
But, like, look, I just 1,000 years. Like, yeah. And the whole point of the Farzinath people is that it's a version of humanity that's experienced the absolute excesses of the human consciousness as much as possible to the point where they bounced back off and settled back down and then came back to Earth. I don't, like, 10 years is enough to forget someone.
That's brutal.
That's what it is. Maybe she made, that's the whole thing about deifying Elizabeth Sobeck. If you're around her 1,000 years ago, you can't possibly forget the amazing Elizabeth Sobeck. Whereas in Zero Dawn, she was just a cool scientist. She, like, figured some stuff out. She wasn't this unbelievably magnetic force, this celebrity, this Jesus Messiah figure that would stay with you for 1,000 years.
Listen, right, I get that, but I didn't even view it as a sort of Elizabeth Sobeck as a Messiah figure. I just kind of viewed it as someone who was, like, deeply in love with her, didn't get that reciprocated. And like you said, to me, the idea of these people, you know, going away for 1,000 years, experiencing all this stuff, that to me actually only added to the impact of her remembering her, because I was like, yes, she's gone through all of that, but she's still thinking about this scientist.
Because they talk about, like,
1,000 years ago. I thought it was cool.
It is. It should have been really sweet. I just, like I said, my brain in that scene was, how is any of this stuff here? So when they were like, I was just questioning all of it, and then I was like, 1,000 years have passed, but you're still remembering. You're still talking as if you just talked to this person like a few months ago, or years ago, or someone that was a childhood friend or something. But it's 1,000 years, and I was just like, I just didn't buy it. I know what you mean, that if anything, it reinforces how much Elizabeth meant, which is what they want from that scene, but it just felt a bit too tagged on. I also think, in regards to Tilda, she shouldn't have been in the trailer. I don't know if you saw the trailer or not, but that bit where, you know, like, the meeting is in the trailer.
Yeah, like funnily enough, I didn't, I like completely forgot about it. Before I started playing it, then I got to the scene and I was like, holy crap, they showed this in the trailer. Yes. Like, that's such a big moment.
Well, as soon as, like, in one of those early trailers, the first time they showed Tilda at all, and she's in that, like, bright white fancy costume thing, like, I started thinking, well, I bet that's some sort of futuristic person that's come back. And so when the start of the game is like, well, the Odyssey left and we don't know what happened, well, it's clearly that.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's a marketing problem, but still.
One final thing before we go.
Yes.
I want to make it clear that I have one major gripe above all else about this game.
Yes.
And that's that's that you don't get a Far Zenith outfit at the end. You take over the base. Give me one of Tilda's spares. It looks so sick. I want Aloy to have it.
I thought that, because I love that. I thought it would be the Horizon version of that really cool futuristic costume you can get in Control, where it's it's kind of got like some cool tail bits on it, tail feathers. It looks really cool. I thought they were flaily bits. I thought they would have that, you know, their version, the Forbidden West version of that really cool costume you can get in Zero Dawn if you collect all those components, which looks really, it's got like repulsors all over it. Like, apparently there's nothing in Forbidden West that's on that level.
Like I said, I've got the platinum. I've done most of those side missions that reward you with that stuff. I've done the armor mission that should have rewarded you with the good armor.
It really should.
And the one you get sucks. The one you get is not as good as the... There's some good armor pieces in here, don't get me wrong, but like the main end game armor is not as good as the one that was in Zero Dawn.
I love the Tanakh armor, but most of the armor that I got was armor that I got in Zero Dawn. Like, it was like...
I couldn't remember that.
You can get the Nora stuff again. Like, you get... I forget what you call the piece that has the massive headdress on the front of it. Mm-hmm. But I know that there obviously are new pieces out there.
Yeah.
There's just... Overall, there's a feeling with this game. If I round up my... I mean, we'll be talking about it for the rest of the year. But still, my overall thoughts were being quite underwhelmed. And it is just that feeling. And I know that we've just spent 40 minutes talking about the negatives of it.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's the thing that is next level about it is the presentation and the graphics and how much they polished the Zero Dawn formula. But everything else, I think, doesn't get up there.
I have some agreements with you there, but for me, the thing is that, you know, I've said before, you know, I wasn't as huge a fan of the story of Zero Dawn as you was. I wasn't that invested. So to me, here, that wasn't the thing I was mainly looking for. And to me, the story was almost secondary to the gameplay and the exploration and the side missions and the, like, you know, like the stuff you're doing with the Tanakh along the way. So for me, I agree that the story is a missed opportunity, but I don't put the same focus on it. So I would still recommend it alongside that because, like, I don't think it's enough to drive the game.
The thing that's crazy is that they open on a story scene. They open on an epilogue for Zero Dawn. They give you all the Meridian stuff, the Sun King stuff. Hey, look, here's this really important linear-style story beat that we want you to take forward, go to the embassy to figure out all this stuff. But the strengths of the game are in ignoring all that stuff. Like, you got way more out... Well, not necessarily more out of it, but you had a lot of fun immediately by just going into the open-world stuff and getting lost in that. And like you said, the side mission writing is stronger overall and more satisfying than the beats of the story are. So it's just a weird hybrid thing. It's like PlayStation Studios says that you should have a meaningful single player story, but they also want to expand it and go wider because it's now the Horizon IP and all these different things, and they're trying these wider RPG systems. But it feels like it's trying almost two divergent paths. It's like you should be bolted to the story and do that stuff, or you should get lost in the open world.
Yeah.
And Zero Dawn, like, I just think they meshed that better. There was a reason why Aloy, you know, ludonarrative dissonance style, was okay getting lost in the open world because she was exploring the world. Here, she has to save the world and everything's melting. So why is she doing anything other than chasing down that story? It doesn't make sense.
I know what you mean. But what I love more, Scott Hill, is that about 15 minutes ago, I asked how long I had this podcast left, and you said none at all. And here we still are. We could literally talk about this all day. And I hope that people enjoy this discussion because, you know, I feel like, you know, you can love it as much as you want. I love that people love it. But I feel like, you know, talking about a story in this way is good.
Yep.
We haven't been able to do it in a long time
with
this much depth. So I like that the stuff that we loved, I like that the stuff that we could pick apart and criticize. And I hope, like I said, I hope people enjoy this. And I want to know also their thoughts on it because, you know, I only know you. And Ash is like the big Horizon kind of like big fans. Uh-huh. So I want to know how this hit for people like you who are also in it for 5 years.
The thing is, like, I'm very, very curious how things roll out. I'm seeing a lot of people going, oh my God, the graphics. And I second that. Like, it is arguably one of the, if not the best looking game of all time. In sheer, oh my God, that looks gorgeous rendering. And so, I think that's just being shared justifiably. But I'm curious as more people get through it and more people see the story beats and see things like the Ted Farrow stuff and the way Silence is not used and et cetera, and hit the ending point and kind of go, oh, okay, come back later for part three, I guess. Whether that shifts the overall thoughts on it. Like right now it's in that zone of, oh my God, it looks gorgeous and look what the PS5 can do and whatever. And so, I'm curious how things go. I just think that it's incredibly recommendable, like you said. Everybody should play it if they have a PlayStation. You just literally should get stuck into it. But as a package, I think it's still a great addendum to Zero Dawn, but it feels like an addendum. It feels like Zero Dawn is the meatiest part of this so far.
I guess my kind of like summation of it, even though I've done a summation like five times already, is that it feels like a middle part. you know.
Yes, but not in a great way.
No.
not in like a, where we're expanding everything outwards diamond-wise to come back in for the finale. It just feels like, here's a bunch of things. Yeah. Kind of a bit more of a continuation of this, kind of a whole bunch of new things. But yeah, like I said, we'll be talking about this for the rest of time, but especially for the rest of this year. Come find us on social media, let us know what you think of Horizon Forbidden West, but stay away from the spoilers in a public forum, because we'll probably be the first spoiler podcast to
Maybe.
Dive into this stuff.
I'm not sure.
Because we've got to do something before Elden Ring kicks the door down, which is happening in 48 hours.
Just breathe it down my neck, man. Fire breath down the neck.
I'm going to get thwomped. I'm going to get destroyed. I'm going to get absolutely flattened. But for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye, Scott Tilford.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.